My name is Howard Thorsheim.
And I'm Julie Thorsheim. And our overall theme for these sessions is community building through story sharing, with today's focus on childhood memories, family traditions, and celebrations.
You know, Julie, before every class at St. Olaf, and I've taught now for 20 years, I always get butterflies in my stomach before I start, and I've done the same thing today. So I'm looking for a supportive group here and some smiles, which I see, because that helps me to relax. Once I get going, I'm fine, but I always feel that way. The first class period, the first hour, I think, is my mouth going to work? You know, am I going to forget my name and things like that? And usually it works out. So I feel better already.
Well, you know, last night as we were working on this, I commented to you that I was feeling pretty nervous. There are so many renowned speakers here and such an intelligent, informed audience. And, you know, when our 13-year-old heard me say that I was nervous, he said, "You mean parents get nervous?" So that was a real good opportunity to say that we're persons first, whether we're married or have children or not, that it all begins right with the one person sometimes feeling inadequate, as Peter Stanky was saying, and we all have to work through those kinds of feelings.
I guess that's one of the things that makes us different from stones. Stones don't feel inadequate, I guess, very often, but we're probably more like flowers. We're a little bit more brittle or a little bit more fragile, like these wildflowers here that were on the table in the cafeteria. The research base for stories as being powerful, powerful factors in our life, in empowering one another, came out of a study that a colleague of mine, Dr. Bruce Roberts at St. Olaf College, and myself did with 10,000 Lutherans, with a grant from the Department of Health and Human Services, the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And the focus of that research project, which was a community intervention project, that is, we were doing something with congregations in partnership with them, was to try to find ways to discover ways that congregations helped to stem the tide of chemical abuse and also to prevent the onset of new cases and to help care for those who were suffering the pains of chemical abuse. And out of that project, which involved 24 congregations, 8 of them were suburban, 8 of them were urban, and 8 of them were rural, there was a recurring theme, and it was the word story. We heard it, I wonder how many times, before we started saying, "Oh, story. People are talking about their story. What does that mean?" I'm sure it must have been hundreds of times, if not more, that we heard the word story. The 24 congregations worked together with us, and what the most powerful thing that came from that project was the power of sharing what's going on in one's life with other people, sharing one's story. All the things that are sort of the routine things that we talk about with a friend over coffee, the things that are the celebrations in our life, and the things that are the times when the road is rough in life, and life is not always smooth. And so we kept hearing this phrase, "I want to tell my story," or "I'd like to share my story." And as we got to know more and more of the friends in the congregations who are really leaders, the group's members from AA and Al-Anon and Alateen, we learn more and more about the power of story, of sharing life experience. And that's what we mean by story and life story. It's telling about what's going on in our lives with somebody else, rather than having to be alone or feel that we're alone in our life experience. So in a nutshell, story sharing turned out in our research project, which is been published in a number of places, both in technical journals, in the academic journals, and in international conferences, as well as a couple of things which are here in the bookstore. One is called Empowering Leadership, which is written for use in congregations and communities for people working with other people, with some tips from the research, things we learned from the congregations on how to help create settings where people can share their stories with one another, like Holden Village, for example, which happens a lot. Coffee, when we're standing around under the bell, at the pool room, shooting baskets or wherever it is. Another piece that's been written is this piece, Reminiscing Together, Sharing Life Experiences, which is written with some very helpful process pieces that congregations found useful in stimulating story sharing among persons in congregations. Well, it was really a treat for me and for my colleague Bruce Roberts to be involved in this research. My own work as a licensed consulting psychologist and a professor of psychology at St. Olaf College, now going into my 21st year there, I guess, there's nothing that's been as exciting for me as the work that we've been doing with people and learning from them, learning from their experiences. What are these benefits of sharing personal story? The numbers are so large that you hardly need to do statistical tests to show that they're significant. The research project measured the result of story sharing in congregations. We also had another methodology, which we call listening at the margins or listening at the edges, which was asking people, what do you see, what are you learning, and what can you tell us about your own experience? And both approaches, both the traditional measurement approach, quantitative approach with statistical tests and the whole business, as well as the informal portrait, we called it, showed these benefits. The benefits of sharing stories include less distress to the stressors of life. Makes sense. When a person doesn't feel alone, it's easier to encounter those stressors in life, many of which we have no control over. Illness, death, economic downturn, some of these things, loss of the family farm, things that are beyond the control of an individual. We learned a great deal about the lessening of distress to life stressors. That was the first thing. The second thing was there was significantly less chemical abuse and chemical use, which makes sense because if there's less distress to the stressors of life, chemicals which work really well for a while to anesthetize or reduce the perceived pain from the situation, there was less need for trying to cope with the situation by using of chemicals at all, and certainly less abuse. The third thing, there was more trust among people in the congregation and between them and their family members and between other people in the community. And this trust had a really powerful result in itself. There was more risk-taking in initiating contacts and relationships with other people, talking to somebody that one has never met before, asking them what their name is and telling them what your name is, meeting them on the street and saying, I don't know you, we haven't talked before, but my name is Howard. Or going up to Joel and saying, hi, Joel, I'm Howard here, which is a joke that we had yesterday when we were talking about learning names. His father, Andy, said, this is Howard here. And Joe said, hello, Howard here. And so that's been kind of fun. So there's more risk-taking because people are more trusting of others. Well, all of you are involved in leadership positions of all kinds, in families, in work situations, in congregations, in professions, with children, with spouse, with parents, with all different kinds of people. And as leaders, we can be empowering leaders. We can help one another share our stories with one another. On a personal note, I've said a note about the research, but on a personal note, when Julie and I first met, one of the things that really drew us together was finding some connections in our stories. I think one of our first dates, we were talking about the fact that as kids, we'd both read the Laura Ingalls Wilder series, Little House on the Prairie, Little House by Plum Creek, there's one, and so on. And that was a real connection. It was something to talk about on a first date when I was nervous. It really helped. I thought, there's somebody I can relate to her. And then we found that our grandparents not only came from Norway, but basically the same region in Norway. Luckily, we're not related, but that could have happened in Norway. But it's not that our connections are because we're very much alike. Many of the connections are because we're really different. We're not clones. We're really unique in a lot of ways. I remember back in college, we had a discussion one time when we were both dealing with the issue in the 60s about whether people should build bomb shelters or not. Remember back that time, that was the real issue. And we went away for a weekend and hadn't seen each other, and we're really thinking about this, both of us. We met each other in the library, and we saw each other, and probably back then we shook hands. I don't know. I probably more than that. But anyway, we said, did you come to a conclusion? And we both said, yes. And I said, oh, isn't that wonderful to have thought about it and to have come to a conclusion and everything. And then it came out that we'd come out on different sides of the issue. I'm embarrassed to say I came out in the position of we ought to build bomb shelters, which I don't think is really helpful at all.
You're a physics major.
I was a physics major, but I've changed. And great wine cellars. So there is a way of transforming that image to something that, like, new wine in old bomb shelters or something like, good, thanks, Joe. So we're different, and differences are one of the things that help bring people together, too.
I'd like to pick up again on this overall summer theme at Holden, treasures in earthen vessels, and how we feel and really believe strongly that telling stories, telling our life story and listening to others is a gift we can give one another. Most of us, when we think of gift, think of, you know, happy times and pretty gifts wrapped up with ribbon, or bringing our coins and our dollars, you know, to church, or cakes to funerals, or our gifts of time. And certainly, these things are gifts. But we may feel if our earthen vessel, our life, has a lot of kinks and cracks in it by the time we've gotten to be who we are now because of life experiences that have been painful, that we may not have any gift to give others, any story to share. We may think we have to try hard to find those times that we're happy and that we'll give somebody else pleasure or a smile to someone's face. And certainly if those are true stories, they're gifts. We also feel that sharing some of the pain that comes out of our life with others, taking some risks, being vulnerable, is a gift to be shared for a couple of reasons. One is that it's an affirmation of ourself. Anytime we can say, I'm here, I've survived, but this is what I've come through. So it can be healing to the storyteller, but also empowering and healing to the listener, because for one thing, the listener may find a reflection of a part of their own experience in that other person's story, and a sense of permission that, well, if they got along okay and they're talking about this, I can too. Those of you that heard Norma Jean Strumman's first presentation yesterday, she talked about this healing power of groups a lot. Just a personal note about myself and how I've come to this topic. My current work is in a psychiatric inpatient situation with adolescents and their families. Other social work experiences I've had have been in schools and in child welfare. Perhaps the greatest teachers of all to me have been my husband and our four children, who range in age now between 11 and almost 21. And it is through both the experiences at home and through the groups that I do in the work situation with survivors of physical and sexual abuse, with other issues, grief issues, that I see this power of story working both for the person currently talking and for the gathered group. I just add a word of caution. I think that for people who have had very painful life experiences, sometimes the vulnerabilities are really great. And the area of boundaries is very important. And I think we as a community, we as church groups, can do a great deal more to provide safe settings for people to tell their story. At the same time, I think we have to be very respecting of ourselves and others, that we only risk what we feel is going to be affirming to us in any situation and not an invasion of our boundaries or another's boundaries. Because we all need security and structure and settings. And most of us have found that church coffees or a board meeting at church or a committee doesn't turn out to be the place where we can talk and bear our soul on things. It's a little bit like Scott Peck says in his book, A Different Drum. Wherever you've got organization and a certain agenda to be accomplished, that doesn't enhance community. There's tasks to be done, and the focus is much more objective than personal. I'd like to just preview both today and where we intend to go the rest of the week. Today, in our story sharing, we'd like to focus on childhood memories, particularly maybe on a very memorable Christmas. And then Thursday, on crises and hard times and what those gathered that day have found they've lived through that is worth sharing to others, with others, what life experiences have taught, what the feelings were, what we can learn from those hard times and crises. And then Friday, with a focus on relationships and sexuality, nurturing healthy attitudes in ourselves and in our children, making choices, decisions, exploring relationships. And Saturday, seasons of life and transitions.
Just a little bit about the conceptual framework that story sharing makes sense in the context of. And that was really some sentence, wasn't it? I'll try to get less convoluted. And see, sometimes my mouth doesn't work. See, it gets tied up. The conceptual framework for the research project could have been summarized by all these wildflowers that we're seeing all around us, because they've turned out to be a wildflower, that is, a powerful metaphor for us in capturing the major finding of our entire four-year research project with 10,000 people. And the major finding is that for people who are invested in their community, and I'll say something about what an investment in community is, they are healthier, they share stories more often, they take risks in establishing relationships with others, reaching out to someone else, there's less distress to life stressors, all those things that we mentioned before, more trustful. Those are benefits from investment in community. But what is investment in community? Well, like any good investment, investment in community has returns both to the investor and that which is being invested in the community. So it's a reciprocal benefit, everyone wins situation. There are four pieces, or as we call them, variables, that constitute or make up this investment in community finding. And we've summarized them on this wildflower metaphor here. Let's talk about wildflowers for a little bit. Here's some that we borrowed from the cafeteria, from the lunchroom, and there are all kinds of them around us. One of the things that's true about wildflowers is that they're really very different, and yet they live together with other wildflowers and the rest of the ecology. In fact, it's their differences that make them healthy, because they're not going to be wiped out by a single disease that takes Dutch elm, that takes elm trees, for example, or a certain kind of oak blight that takes all oak trees. Because wildflowers are different, they're healthier. They contribute in many ways to one another's life. Let's think about a seed for a moment, a wildflower seed. A seed, when sprouted in the ground in a safe place, takes root and it begins to sprout. This wildflower is sort of like a story that develops. A wildflower is going to be a metaphor for a story. Your story, somebody else's story. Stories are different. They grow in different ways, in different places. But how does this investment in community, the growing of something like a story, happen? Well, we all have experiences in life. Our grounding, our foundation, is our experience. That's how we look at the world around us. We look at the world based upon experiences that we've had in the past, and we all look at the world differently. every one of us in this room may look at a single experience from as many different viewpoints as there are people in the room, based upon our experience. But as we take root in what is important to us, what's on our mind, our root issues, our radical issues, our basic rooting issues, what's on our mind, our story is given support to grow and to blossom and to produce more seeds for more story of our own story and other stories. There were four things that came out of the major research project with 10,000 people, which are so simple and so doable that it was astonishing to us when we saw the numbers and saw the impact that these four variables were having in people's lives when they did them. The first of them was one that was mentioned already today, and that's the importance of naming. Name tags are really important for helping people to become invested in a community. Why? Well, when you know someone's name, you can bring them to mind easier and picture them. It's hard to bring someone to mind when their name is not known to you. So people who know names are healthier people, as well as the people who are named. So to call someone by name is to give them a gift. It's to give yourself a gift. Well, why is that true? Because when you bring someone to mind, it's easier to care about them, which is the second variable. Naming is the first leaf. The second is caring. When you are able to name people, you can care about them and bring them to mind. The third piece is linking up with other people. People that you care about, who you can bring to mind because you know their names, to give and to receive support, to talk with one another, to give and receive support, not just give support, but to give and receive support, a reciprocal relationship, so that one is accepting the gift that the other is giving of their experience as well. The fourth variable was a real surprise to us. We didn't expect this one, and it's been a real difficult one for many people to initially see why it's different from anything else in our experience. And this fourth piece of investment in community, the four pieces being naming, caring, linking, and asking for help, is the gift that you give to another when you ask them to help you. When you indicate your need for them, that you are open to their help and need it, and in doing that are exposing yourself as being vulnerable, because it is not as though you have it all together, don't need anybody, can tough it out all by yourself. You're saying to someone, I need you. Would you help me with this? As long as it's an authentic need. Now, to say to someone, would you help me sharpen this pencil? I really need help. You know, turn the crank for me while I put it in. If that's not an authentic need that you have, it's very transparent and people will see through it. But if it's an expression of a real need that you have. So those are the four pieces, the wildflower metaphor, for helping to bring people together. Well, what happens then? Very often in our life there are disconnections between people. They're across all kinds of lines. There are lines between young and old, boundaries. There are lines between races. There are lines between rich and poor. There are lines between all kinds of groups, male and female. And when we're in the middle of our position in one of these groups, and standing, as it were, in the middle of a backyard, so far away from the fence between our two yards that we don't even see our neighbor, there's no possibility for talking with one another. But when something happens to make the boundary permeable, and it's very often a crisis, it's very often a pain, it can be a celebration and a joy, people come together around their concerns, which they share mutually. And when they come together, then it's possible to reach out and touch, physically, emotionally, and to share one's life experiences with another, and to feel that one is not alone in that experience.
What we'd like you to do now is to join us, if you will, on closing your eyes and seeing if you can bring to mind a childhood memory of an especially memorable Christmas. Then we'd like to invite you to share that in a group of two. two or three. I'm not quite sure how the numbers will come out. One of us can join you, so maybe it works best if we do it in groups of two.
If you'd find somebody near you and pull your chairs together so that you're facing each other, move the chairs around, stand up, pull the chairs together. And what we'd like you to do, as Julie mentioned, is a couple of things. We'll give you a couple of instructions in just a moment. If you can form a group, a couple people over there together. If it's more than three, it won't work as well. If it's two or three, that's.
And if somebody would like to do this, but want us to do it in a group of two, I'm free to pull.
Sure, sure. Okay, let me give you a couple of instructions. Hi, Randy. Hello, Andrew. What we're doing, Randy, is sharing some stories of Christmases that we remember with another person. So if you'd like to join, just plop down someplace and form a, make a group of three into two groups of two, maybe, rather than making a group of three into four, if you could. If somebody would join with you, maybe Joe or Peter or somebody. Okay, here's how we'll go. We'd like to invite you to tell as much of the story, telling about the picture that's in your mind, the smells, the what you remember from that picture, in about 3 minutes to the other person. Now, we realize that's not enough to tell a story of a favorite or memorable Christmas. It may not be a favorite one. It may be memorable for other reasons. And then, after you have, and we'll help you keep track of the time here so that we'll let you know when the 3 minutes is up. We're going to ask the other person, or one of the other persons, if there are two of you listening, to help the person who has just told their story know that you were listening by telling them back what you heard them say, to paraphrase in your own words what you heard them tell you. And if there are two of you in a group, then you can kind of both be telling pieces of what you've heard. And if there's one of you, tell back some of what you've heard. You don't have to have a tape recording of what you've heard, and the things that you'll pick up on will be whatever you want to pick up on. And then we'll switch roles after that, and the other person or persons will have a chance to share their story, and then the other people will be the listeners. So we'd like to ask you to begin, and whoever would like to start out in a group may do that, and you can figure out how you're going to figure out who is going to be starting first if you wish to. But we'll let you know when 3 minutes are up, and then it'll be time to reflect back what it is that you heard about the story about this Christmas. So you can begin. We'll let you know when 3 minutes are up. Okay, if you would draw your thought to a close. I'm not going to cut you off in the middle of a sentence, but draw the thought that you're just in the middle of to a close, and then when you finish that sentence or that thought, would the other person reflect back, what did you hear? What did you hear from the person who was just telling the story? It would take about maybe a minute and a half or so to for the reflection back and the paraphrasing. So finish the thought that you're on, and then have the other person who is a listener reflect back what you were saying. And when you're hearing the person reflect back, pay attention, you, those of you who just shared your story, how do you feel when you hear the other person telling you back and indicating that they in fact have heard what you were saying? And sharing that as a gift in return. You have shared a gift of your story, and they're sharing the gift of having listened in return. So finish your thought and then the reflect back. And then I'll tell you when the minute and a half is up, when it's time for the other person to tell their story. So I'll help you keep track of time. Okay, I must say, I'm not really surprised, but it's so good to see the eye contact that you're maintaining with each other. And the posture of leaning toward people and looking at them, and the use of hands, you're really good at that. And I also heard lots of people using names at the beginning and introducing each other. And I've seen people telling the story back and reflecting back what it is that they heard. So you really are doing really well. It's not a surprise, but it's good to see. And it's also good to see people who are hard to get to quit, to stop, who want to keep talking. That's also a good sign. And the buzz is really good. So now, if we could change roles so that one of the other people who had not told a story yet in the group would share with the other person or the other two persons the memorable Christmas experience that you have on your mind, and for the other person or other two people to listen. And we'll again take about 3 minutes for the sharing of the story, and then I'll tell you when that time is up so that we can help keep pace here. So would one of the other people who would like to share your story with the other person or persons? At this time, if you would again draw your thought to a conclusion, and when you have done that, if the other person would reflect back what it was that they heard you saying, paraphrase in your own words what it was that you heard the person say. So bring the thought to a close, and then take about a minute and a half to reflect back what you heard that person saying. All right. If we could focus back here at this point. I know you're not finished, and there's not a lot of time. But at this point, could I ask one of you to... somebody in one of the groups to share the story that you shared with the other person or the other two persons for the benefit of the people who are listening to this tape at some time in the future, maybe, so that they could get a sense of what your story was like, and also so that the rest of us can have a sense of what some of the other groups' Christmases were like. And then when you're sharing that gift, the gift that the others might be thinking about to return, to reciprocate, might be to think about, is there something that it triggers in your mind, what that person is talking about, that rings a bell with part of your memory of that Christmas, of a memorable Christmas, that you hadn't yet thought about, but because of what the other person has said, something comes to mind, and that you'd be willing to share that as a reciprocal gift to the person who has just shared something about their story. Would someone do that? Would someone share their story? Would you? Well, let's see. We need to volunteer ourselves, but not somebody else. Would somebody like to volunteer themselves? Be willing to? Okay. Would you just? Hold that and just tell the story as you told it before. And then the rest of you have.
See, we had a reciprocal story. That's why I volunteered.
I see. Okay.
We already jumped in. Okay.
She didn't tell hers. When I was a child and grew up in Oregon. And we had very little circumstance-wise, but we did have our tree, and it would be in a spare room, which we called the front room, which we never used, was not allowed to use, I should say. And on the tree, we had these candles in holders, and on Christmas Eve, they would light the candles. And that was the highlight of Christmas for us.
Oh, what a wonderful story. Does that make a connection with anybody else's experience of something that was part of there's our connection right here? All right.
This is for real. No, I say when she shared her story in our group, that what it brought back that I hadn't even thought about was when I was a young child that my dad worked with Concordia College in Portland, and one of the professors there had married a woman from Germany. And as a treat that at Christmas, they had the candles on their tree, and they would invite, before they lit it, they would invite all the faculty children to come and watch. And then we'd light the tree, and we'd sing a carol or two, and then they'd put them out. But
what a connection. Wonderful. What good examples of the stories are different, the connections are different, the stories that were remembered look different, things that were recalled and shared were different from one another. And yet there was a common bond through a ground of experience in the Christmas experience. Thank you for sharing both the story and the connection.
I would like to just very briefly cite a couple of materials we've used in our own family to, focus in on the real meaning of Christmas that... I think, was shown, for instance, in the stories you shared about the lighting of the candles, and then Bob and I and the group that we just finished sharing, the memories we had focused mostly on a sense of well-being and peace and being with family, rather than the, you know, packages and... there was a fair amount of excitement in some of the stories. But anyway, a little booklet here, The Festival of Christmas by Mary Hinderly and Edna Hong, used to be available through Augsburg, and I'm not sure if it still is, but there are a couple copies in the Holden Library, and it's just filled with Advent activities. If you are looking for materials to use in your own home or with children or grandchildren. And then there are some others around, too. These I pulled out of the Holden Library as examples. Keeping Christmas by Sandra Sorlin and Teaching and Celebrating Advent by Patricia and Donald Griggs. And then in the Holden Bookstore is the Alternatives approach. Whose birthday is it anyway? And some other resources. Just also touching very briefly on other shared family things other than holidays. Harold Belgum has a really good material on family vacations, and it's the kind of thing you can take along on a car trip. That is or used to be available through Augsburg. And if some of these resources aren't anymore, some of you should be writing new ones or asking for some of these good old ones to be reprinted.
One of the persons in the congregation said, you know, after they'd worked on a process much like we've done together this afternoon, they said, you know what happens to a pump when it stands out in the yard for a while? They said, well, what happens to the pump? They said, it goes dry. And then they said, you know what you do when a pump goes dry? And we said, well, and they said, you prime the pump. And they said, what we just did was kind of like a pump primer in that it's a kind of a storyteller starter, which is something that people have in common. But then there are other settings where conversations can continue and people can share other parts of their life experiences as well. But it's something that's doable and it's something that can be done in a brief period of time.
As we wrap up this session and look forward to Thursday, the storytelling about crises, hard times, I'd first like to invite all of you to return. We would like to continue this story-sharing process. And I'd also like to tie in some of the themes that I've been hearing from the other sessions that I've managed to get to. There are a number of the FOSI this time around, at least, that are focusing on self-esteem, development of the self, struggles with, I know Ruth Steenerson is coming up later with the struggle between good and evil. She was saying nothing like taking a small topic. Sessions that Norma is doing on grief. I was struck this morning by Peter Stanky's presentation on anxiety, shame, and guilt, and that all of us, just by virtue of living, have a certain amount of all of those facets within us, and it's how we cope with them that help us determine whether we are healthy or dysfunctional. And storytelling is a matter of disclosure. Sometimes I've been in groups, like in the therapy situations I'm in, where somebody I know particularly well because they're on a unit I work on will be in another group and start telling something of a falsehood in a way. If somebody says, well, who was there to care about you and protect you? I heard one girl say, well, my mom and my dad. And I said to her, you know, I'm not sure you're being entirely truthful. And she said, no, they really weren't there for me. But she was able to name a couple other people that currently are being there. So I think with storytelling, it's very important that what we do choose to share is our own truth, and not weaving a fantasy for anyone's benefit. It certainly doesn't benefit ourselves. And I picked up Herb Brokering's book, God So Loved. He's got so many pictorial ones, as you probably know, combined with other people's photography. And he had something here on Jesus and self-disclosure. Child Jesus' newest word, condescended so absurd, delicate as newfound bird. Mercy is a lover's thing, spirit hovers high on wing. Earth receive your offering. Break into our old enclosure, miracle of self-disclosure.
In conclusion, what we would like to ask you to do is, would you, if you would please, jot down on this card any thoughts that have come to mind about story that you've experienced, the use of story? Has it been a helpful thing in your life? Resources that come to mind that you think would be helpful for us to continue to share it with others this week, books that you know of that deal with story, other things that you've heard in other sessions that you think would be important to lift up as being resources, and also feedback about the session today. What did you think about it? What suggestions would you have to make it more helpful? What things did you particularly like? What things would you change? Would you have a suggestion for how they might be changed? So that as we go into the next session on Thursday, we have the benefit of your experience today in helping us as we move forward through the week. Just a couple of words. Doesn't have to be long. You don't have to put your names down. Just anonymous. If you've got a suggestion of something that we might read or suggest that others might read that you know of, anything that you would jot down, your reactions today, how do you feel about today? How did you feel about the process? How did you feel about talking with others and having others listen to you and to reflect back to you? Now, some of you didn't get a chance to tell your story and have it reflected back because you were in a group of three. Let me suggest something, that maybe there'll be a time, maybe supper tonight, or maybe after the session, where some of you might allow that other, the other two people might allow that person to share his or her story and reflect back to them too, so that there's an opportunity for the full circle to be there. As Norma Jean Stroman was talking about, the whole circle rather than a broken circle, which is a very powerful metaphor. Stories are, just in conclusion, while you're writing, I'll tell a little story. I know a young woman who has Native American heritage, and she was telling about talking with her grandmother. And her grandmother, she said, is a person who's really not very happy. At least that's the view that most people in her extended family have. But this young woman, who I'll call Jane, talks with her grandmother, and she finds that there's a lot of real pain that, she says, has to be gone through, like helping to push and guide a canoe through the rushes before you get to the lake when you're on a portage. She said, you've got to get through the rushes before you get to the lake. And her sense was that most people hadn't allowed her grandmother to do the work in the rushes, to work through the rushes, but they stopped her. And it was really important for that kind of pain to be expressed, for the grandmother to then to think about some of the things that were on her mind and her memories, which were beyond the pain. So stories are kind of like helping to guide a canoe and a portage sometimes between lake and lake. Well, thanks very much for this time together, and we look forward to getting to know you better as the days go on. Thanks very much. If you could just turn in your cards when you're finished and upside down. Thanks.